Hello, everybody. Welcome back to episode number 5 of the Try Games podcast. I am your host, number 1, Mr. Troupon, a.k.a. Austin. I'm here, as usual, with our other hosts.
Oh, me? Yeah.
Yes, you.
That's the antipode.
Yes, sir. I'm tired, so this time we're going to really try to keep our promise of being under an hour. This is for you, Adan, all right? Okay. I have not been playing anything new. In fact, I haven't been playing much of anything at all this past week. What about you?
I've been playing Majora's Mask. I just finished Ocarina of Time. And
I hate you.
Dealt the final blow to Ganon in a very satisfying way.
I hate you.
It was good. You should do it.
I know.
And so now I'm playing Majora's Mask, which is an absolutely stunning, awesome game. Just very, very compelling. I like playing it, and I want to play it now.
You should play it while we're podcasting.
No, then I'll wind up killing Termina in the third day.
We'll hear random quips of shit. Damn it! Fuck!
No,
I give up.
That only happens when I play New Super Mario Brothers. I was making my friend a little startled at the job this week because I was playing New Super Mario Brothers while we were sitting available, and he was like, "Dude, why are you cursing to your game?" I said, "Because it feels good."
Yeah, I need to finish that. Anyway, you playing anything else?
Other than those two and Partners in Time, trying to finish that. That's it.
You're boring. Well, you're better than me because I haven't played anything at all. So let's screw this. Shut up. Stop gloating. Let's skip to the news. We are going to just talk about the topics that we've reported on, which aren't very many, but I put some things up there this week. The first is the resurrected rumor of a Microsoft portable console, video game console in 2007. If you'll remember, there was this whole rumor about the Project Origami, and they showed someone playing Halo on this portable device, and everyone was like, "Ah, it's going to be the X-Boy! It's going to be the X-Boy!" And it ended up just being an ultra-portable computer that ran Windows XP. But there's a second flirtation with this rumor when Dean Takahashi? I might have misspelled it in the article. My bad. But he wrote the original book behind the creation of the Xbox, which I haven't read yet, but I want to. And he wrote a second one about the 360. And he had this passage that spoke about Jay Allard talking about, you know, leading a handheld project, but I think that was later scrapped. And I remember at some point some journalist was talking about on his blog or something about how he saw Jay Allard at some event or something, and he was a little bit tipsy, and he started talking about, you know, "Oh, we're going to have an iPod killer that plays games and is going to kill the PSP and the Game Boy too," but maybe that was just him being drunk. But now this group of analysts say that, well, let's find the quote here. GameSpot, and this is where I got the news from, GameSpot is reporting that Texas-based research firm The Diffusion Group has published a report called, quote, "On the Future of Portable Game Consoles Analysis and Forecast," end quote. And it basically claims that they're estimating a release date for Microsoft between late 2007 and early 2008. Now, the thing is, this is all conjecture on their part, I think.
Absolute 100% conjecture. It's like they're looking at a crystal ball.
Yeah. But the thing is, I don't know what they're basing it. They seem to just be basing it on the opportunity that's there, you know, as opposed to real hard rumblings. Now, I mean, it'd be kind of stupid to be like, "Oh, Microsoft has no intention of entering the market." But, I mean, how legitimate do you think this time frame is for them? And do you even think that they're even looking at it this seriously at all?
They would have to really, really be producing this thing for the past 2 years. Because if you think about it, they have no experience in console, portable console, handheld. And that would mean that they'd have to get resources for that, and they'd have to probably engineer something from the ground up, unless they're going to steal something, like take a Windows tablet or PDA and convert it into a game system or something like that.
Right.
And then they have to market the damn thing. So late 2007, early 2008 means that E3 next year is going to be about this. And that would mean that they'd probably have to start making hints and rumors probably after summer. So if we don't hear anything in September about a portable Microsoft console, ain't gonna happen. I don't think it's gonna happen. Unless they really, really, really keep it under wraps, and then E3 next year is just boom, we get coming out with a portable. Buy it. All
right. Maybe this is it. Maybe you know how Microsoft did the whole I Love Bees thing for Halo 2. They're big into this this viral marketing thing. And in fact, I think they kind of leaked out, they possibly leaked out the Xbox 360's name on their own. Like, people are saying, oh, someone found it out. No, they probably leaked it. That's what people are saying. So, I don't know, maybe a random Microsoft employee was told to call people at the Fusion Group and say, tell people that it's coming. I don't know. I mean, when you think about it, though, I mean, these analysts have a point in that, well, you think about the Xbox launch, and it was Sony, Nintendo. That was about it. And Sega was kind of still in the running. But they came in, and they, you know, for the most part, they succeeded. And, I mean, the rationale here is that, well, there's only Sony and Nintendo in the portable space. That's just those two. And, you know, maybe the portable space can also support a third console as... a third portable as the console market is doing. And now that they actually have the Xbox branding behind them, you know, people know the Xbox name now, whereas before, you know... people kind of laughed, like I laughed at Microsoft, and they were like, we're going to make a game system. I was like, eh, fuck you.
You know what? I'm thinking about this. Bill Gates said that
he wants to buy the Earth?
Other than that, he actually said that he feels that the revolution or the future of gaming is going to be in mobile phone gaming. And that now I'm thinking about that, I'm thinking that probably... there may not be a portable Xbox because of the fact that he wants to combine his Xbox Live Arcade or his Live Anywhere to be between PCs, Xboxes, and mobile phones. Why would he cannibalize the mobile phone with a new Xbox Portable? I do remember him saying that, and I think he was talking about the DS and the PSP and about portable gaming. Either portable gaming or he was talking about the Wii or some crap.
So maybe it's more of, maybe he's making a push to, you know, for Windows, what is it, Windows CE or Windows for Windows Mobile? So he's pushing for a software development platform instead of a...
yeah, and that would probably sell a lot better because...
yeah. But that is more boring when you think about it. It's like, oh, no new system, just an OS, blah, you know. That would be smarter, though. To get the foot in the door, and then they say, you know what? Now we're gonna get a X boy or whatever. And it's like 2009. X-boy. Yeah. Moving on, something that is probably very, very a very happy occurrence for both of us. IGN, of all the stuff that you and I both make fun of them for, they did a great thing and resurrected IGN Dreamcast. I was browsing. I was browsing IGN's older sites, and I decided to look at the Dreamcast page, and I saw that it was updated, and I was like, what the hell's going on here? So I looked at it, and I was like, oh, this must be an update like in 2 years ago. But then I looked at Kotaku, and Kotaku was like, they're actually resurrecting it, and they're looking at every single, well, they say every single American released Dreamcast game, of which there are 243, and they're re-reviewing each, and they're ranking them. Now, regardless of what the quality of the reviews are, I've never been too big of a fan of IGN's reviews, but that's just me. The fact that they're doing it at all, and the fact that they're taking the time to, you know, give this console its due, you know, it makes me happy.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. Except for the fact that my interest in editorial and journalistic view of the Dreamcast has kind of waned. It's interesting to see that they are giving it, you know, a little bit of respect and kind of giving another once through of the titles that are in the library. It'd be nice if, you know, certain other people gave the titles another once through and let us buy them.
Yeah.
Because I'd sure like to get some Dreamcast games that have either been damaged or stolen or lost.
Or in my possession that I still have to return to you.
Oh, that's just one.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny how they're individual, what am I talking about? Independent developers that are still making games for the Dreamcast. Like there are like one or two shooters that just recently came out. And I kind of it kind of makes me think about what if they decided to, just kind of put out a new streamlined Dreamcast system for very little, and just let developers play with it and let them put out games, much like what, Xbox Live Arcade is trying to do with digital distribution, same thing as Nintendo's Virtual Console. It's a very independent, friendly environment. Well, I think, and small developers can sit there and create their own new puzzle games or whatever for Xbox Live. And Iwata's saying, Virtual Console is going to be the iTunes of video games. Independent developers are more than welcome here. So it makes me wonder how far people could take this so-called dead console, because I'd really like to see it live past its 2-year lifespan. And maybe this IGN thing is first step. Wishful thinking, probably, but I don't know. I'd love to see it happen.
Not too sure about it because I couldn't really hear
Oh, sorry.
you.
I basically said I'd like to see independent developers give the Dreamcast a second chance, much like the Virtual Console and Xbox Live Arcade are. But then they'd have to get more units out there, and that's the problem.
Yeah, they'd have to get dev kits and they'd have to fire up the old GD-ROM burner again. Probably cost too much.
Yeah.
That's probably why it's only been done in Japan.
I'm gonna pour out a little of my beer for Dreamcast. Oh no, I'm not, because I have a carpet, but I'll do it in my mind. Next piece of news, and I'm not sure if this is in the issue of EGM that I currently have and I just missed it, or if this is in like the next one for July. But people were saying, "Oh, Final Fantasy VII demo on PS3, that shit looks hot, blah blah blah, I want it." And then someone said, "No, this is just a tech demo." But apparently it actually is going to be re-released for the PlayStation 3, looking like it did at E3. Thoughts?
It's Final Fantasy VII. I know that somebody I know at my job would be going crazy if he heard this news. But that's because he's an FF7 like fanatic.
Well, he should download the podcast and hear this news.
Yeah.
Make him download. But I really just from an aesthetic perspective, I mean, I'm not gonna run out and spend $660 plus tax on this, but I'd like to see from an aesthetic perspective how seven really changes it, how seven really changes, because I mean, I look at it, it's a first or second generation PlayStation 1 game, right? For its
Second.
time, second, okay, for its time it was great. But visually, I don't think it aged very well. I find in general that 3D games just don't age very well. But and this is one example of that. The pre-rendered backgrounds, whatever. But you got characters with no wrists.
No elbows.
Yeah, and then you look at Final Fantasy VIII and Final Fantasy IX, and those look really good. And to many people, I am not one of them. But to many people, Seven is the pinnacle of PS1 RPGs. So I'd like to see how they take this and remake. In fact, I always rail against ports and remakes and all that shit, but Final Fantasy has a place in my heart, and I would like to see them remake 7, 8, and 9 on the PS3 and see how it looks, or the Xbox, or whatever can handle next-gen graphics, and just to see how it looks.
I guess. I mean, just judging by the fact that you could probably now on a PS3 produce FF8 in the quality that the cutscenes were in,
Yeah.
that would be pretty nice.
Yeah, and that's what.
But they would need to improve the gameplay for it
Oh,
to
of
be a
course not.
worthy
They wouldn't.
purchase.
But both of us always rail against, they just improve the graphics and gameplay. But when the source material is good enough, and I just feel a little bit nostalgic, once in a while I like to see the remake. I definitely want to see a remake of Final Fantasy VI, which is heads and shoulders above every single other one, in my opinion. I would like to see a remake of that. I would like to see a remake of 4, which is the second one that's head and shoulders above everything else.
You mean like a 3D remake?
Yeah, just for the hell of it.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
I was about to say, wait, there is a remake of 4.
No, yeah, for the GBA. But, I mean, a 3D one, just for shits and giggles. You know, it's not going to make the game better, but it's just something fun to you know, take a trip down memory lane and say, oh, look, this is what they would have done had they been in 3D, or this is what Rosa really sounds like.
Right, kind of like what they're doing with 3.
Yeah. So, I just kind of like to see that. And this has me kind of excited. You know, again, I'm still not going to pay $6.60 for this, but, you know, I'd like to just see it. When I saw that trailer, boy, I was on the fence right there. I was like, this is going to be something good. Well, then again, I hadn't heard the price, so it didn't really matter. But when I saw that trailer, I was like, man, I'm against remakes and ports, but if they did this, that would be kind of nice. But yeah, any other thoughts on this, or should we move on?
I'm done on this. I know some people who would buy it, and I know that I'm not that much of a Final Fantasy VII fanatic to purchase it again.
Yeah. I just want to see 6 and 4. That's all I need. But
6 and 4.
Anyway, moving on. Sony has apparently written a new gospel in the Bible.
Really?
Yes. Apparently, the personal computer is obsolete.
Whoa. Is this Philip 1?
This is Philip Harrison Esquire the Bold. This is basically telling us that what we're recording this podcast on is obsolete and we don't need it.
I wonder if in a couple of years we'll be recording our podcast on PS3. It'll be called Playcasts.
I got to read this. Here's the article we have on Trigames. News is supposed to be impartial, but no one would blame our readers for laughing at the following piece of news. Sony's Phil Harrison decidedly on a rampage ever since his announcement that the motion-sensitive PS3 controller was an innovation, the likes of which the motion-sensitive Sidewinder from Microsoft and the Nintendo Wii controller have never seen. Piped up again in promoting the super powerful PS3. And I believe you did a good rendition of Al Sharpton, so I would like you to read this.
Okay, well, according to GameSpot.com, Lord Harrison delivered sermon. We believe that the PS3 will be the place where our users play games, watch films, browse the web, and use other home computer functions. Can I get a witness?
Hell yeah!
The PlayStation 3 is a computer. We do not need the PC.
We don't need the PC.
We do not need the PC.
We don't need the PC.
Can I get a witness in this house? Can I get an amen?
Amen!
And thus it was declared, we do not need PCs, and the third apostle and prophet Philip Harrison, Esquire the Bold, smote the personal computer into oblivion.
It's gone.
The PlayStation 3 arose as the almighty machine, the one true force, the alpha and the omega of electronic productivity. And it was so that Quicken and SAP were implemented into the PS3, birthing a new era of computing. This is just fucking ridiculous. You know, every time I'm like, we gotta lay off Sony... They gave us shit like Shadow of the Colossus. They gave us all the Final Fantasies and Next Gen. They gave us, you know, different things. Phil Harrison wants to pipe up and say something. This is like Yamauchi from Nintendo all over again.
Oh, man. Remember that story.
That fucking zombie was like, I don't need Final Fantasy. They've disgraced us. Blah, blah, blah. And now this guy's doing the same thing. What does he drink? I would like some of that.
I think he drinks ether.
Ether.
Very, very dangerous stuff.
Ether. that sounds sexy.
Yeah, it sounds like a hole in your neck.
And I'm sitting here with Heineken. He's getting ether. That's some high grade quality shit.
Mm-hmm.
Have you any thoughts? I'm just astounded by this. Do you have any thoughts, or can we move on?
Surprised. So surprised. I think I might have to hang somebody I know. I ain't gonna hang myself, but I think I might hang somebody I know if the PlayStation 3 becomes the next PC. Ugh. Non-upgradable, you know, non-customizable to a point. It doesn't have much productivity. Although he says, what does he say? He says that the PS3 is a place where our users will be able to use other home computer functions. But
and battle giant enemy crabs and expose their weak points for massive damage. Yes, that's innovative gameplay. That was the worst presentation at
E3. That was awesome. And he tripped up too.
Thing.
He was like, yeah. So, if this
crab
actually
comes
happens,
onto the screen, oh, there it is.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Oh my god, that was horrible. Mm-mm. But what do you think he mean? Like, he can't be serious.
No,
he can't be serious.
He can be. I mean, he's a serious.
He still looks like a penis to me.
Yeah, he does too. But he could be as serious as Kazirai and Kutaragi. I mean, these guys are off their rocker. But Sony as a company, they just do stuff that's just like, what in the hell are you thinking?
Well, I just want to know when I can jack into the Matrix and experience the fourth dimension.
You're supposed to do that with the PS2.
Yeah, because my balls are still in 3D. I don't know.
Are they smooth as eggs?
What? Oh, God. I'm going to ignore you said that, but
it's a Dave Chappelle reference.
Okay. I think it's just more hubris. I mean, I'm sure that he's speaking just on an entertainment platform, because he's saying play games, watch films, and browse the web. Now, I'm not going to fucking browse the internet for my console. Like, the Opera browser for Revolution, I'm just like, eh, whatever. What am I going to do? Draw the letters in with the remote? What the hell am I going to do? Mm-hmm. You know, so why am I going to browse the internet on my console when I could sit there and type my links and you know, from the comfort of my chair in front of my monitor? You know, I'd rather do that. But I'm pretty sure he's not really saying that I want to do my taxes on my PS3. And I hope he's not, because that would be really stupid. I mean, next we're going to have a dishwashing PS3 that cooks eggs and
does your taxes.
Yeah. I mean, that's quick. You know what's funny? I believe one or two years ago, I IM'd you, and I said that Samsung was getting into the console business.
Yeah.
And you said they finally went and did it. And obviously that was a joke. That was a lie. But I'm thinking about, you know, Samsung had in Korea, they not only have, you know, memory and phones, you know, they've got monitors, they've got dishwashers, refrigerators, smart refrigerators that connect to the internet, you know, so you can get pwned on while getting mayonnaise. Someone, you know,
ponies.
You can get a PS3 now that, you know, connects to your fridge and or your microwave, and you know, some people microwave their burritos and they go to play Killzone. Well, nobody plays Killzone, but they go to play Genji 2 with a giant enemy crab, and they're like, I want to know when my burrito's done, because my living room's my game system is in the den and my microwave's in the kitchen, so alert me when it's done. The microwave will be done, and Genji will pause, and a Sony message will say, your burrito's done, bitch, go get it. That would be awesome, but not, because that's just ridiculous. So I'm gonna move on before I blow up. This is really annoying. We spoke about this a few weeks ago, but that bill that says that you will have to pay a fine for buying a game that is above your age range, that actually got passed.
Thank goodness I'm 25.
Fines for underage game buying in Minnesota, ESA to file suit. A few weeks back, a bill was proposed in Minnesota to levy a $25 fine against underage consumers who purchase games rated M or AO, mature adults only. It was signed into effect by Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty, and it was sponsored by House Representative Jeff Johnson, also Republican, and Senator Sandra Pappas, Democrat. And you know how Hillary Clinton and Joe Lieberman are on this thing.
Yeah.
Well, not on this bill, but, you know, on this whole video
game.
They're
on the whole video games are bad
and cause you cancer and all that shit. And they, I don't like the precedent that this is sending.
I don't like it either, because it's kind of like picking at the industry. And there was this article, the Wall Street Journal article that you referred me to earlier this week. And the guy made up a really good point. With the games costing $50 and $60, you know, it's not really likely that these kids are going to be able to go into a store by themselves and purchase these games without consent from their mom or their dad.
Right.
Or without using their mom or their dad's money. So, you gotta think about it in one or two ways. If the kid's stealing the money, already his parents are effed up.
Yeah.
Well, not even. I'm not blaming it on the parents, but I'm just saying that
Well, Daddy didn't keep her off the pole, so... I'm sorry, go ahead.
You know, exactly. So basically, if the kid is stealing the money, that's bad. And there's nothing that you can do about it for selling the kid that game.
They're gonna buy that crack cocaine.
And if the kid brings his mom to the store, or if the mother or father gives him the money, that's pretty much consent saying, you can buy this game. Right?
Yeah.
Right. So I don't know. I guess now parents have to go with their kids to the store and say, give me Titty Fighter plus Alpha Silicon. And that game is rated M. And little Timmy, who's like 14 years old, is like drooling.
Titty Fighter Dilicon?
No, Titty Fighter plus Alpha Silicon.
Okay, I was like, what the fuck is Dilicon? Go ahead, I'm sorry.
And so, and basically, this bill is kind of stupid, but they have to do what they have to do.
Wait, who's publishing Titty Fire?
Tito.
Oh, God. They bought by Square,
Oh, I'm sorry, I meant Taito.
Taito. Oh, they got bought by Square, so. Ooh. It just, you know, I stuck this remark in here, you know. Can you buy, if you're 15, can you go and buy rated R DVD?
Yeah, kind of.
So what the fuck?
You're not supposed to, but
you're not supposed to, but Minnesota.
This is the thing. Now, if say Columbine was spawned by an R-rated movie, and say if give me another incident where some kid did something and they blamed it on video games.
John Allen Muhammad. I forgot what his name is. Remember the sniper and his son.
Oh, yeah. The sniper and the kid.
And the news was like, oh, they were talking. It is resembling of Doom and God mode. I don't know how they tied it together, but...
Yeah, it had something to do with him thinking that he was God or something. And it's they a reference related to that Doom quote God mode. To God mode.
God.
But, yeah, now imagine if there was a movie that was really famous that had some kind of God reference in it, and then they linked it to the movie. Now, instead of us reading about... underage game buying in Minnesota, it would probably be underage movie buying.
I'll tell you what, though. Actually, I would disagree with you there and say that we'd hear that, oh, this kid is fucked up. He watched a movie. And end of story.
Because, really, you think?
Yeah, because video games are much more evil than movies because they're video games. And everyone hates video games because they're evil. But movies are okay. Because, you know, Showgirls is all right to watch. I mean, that's fine. But
it's not all right to watch.
But Hot Coffee, oh no. Oh, my God, oh.
We have polygons.
Stick the analog stick in the memory slot. You know? But, I mean, I really think that it's fear of a new medium. I mean, this is generally new. Video games have only been existing for not even half a century. You know, it's a new medium.
Just about.
Yeah. Well, since...
You mean get video games in this type of realm, in, like, 3D, interactive, animated...
Even any video game. I mean, the first video game, what was that? There was Space Wars, right? Developed on an MIT computer, and that wasn't until, like, the late 60s or early 70s,
I think. Yeah, that would be 20, 30 years now.
Yeah, so it's not even a half a century yet. And I think...
Oh, you said half a century.
Yeah. Christoph Gans, who directed the Silent Hill movie, basically said fuck you to Roger Ebert, because Roger Ebert was like, games aren't a form of art. And he made the point that Roger Ebert's just afraid because it's a new medium that he doesn't know anything about. And when silent films first came out, they probably had the similar backlashes. Like, what is this? You know, we have radio. Why do we need this film? Why do we need these? You know what I mean? So it's like, I could be wrong. I mean, he didn't live back then. I wasn't born then, so I don't know. But this is what he said. So given that that's true, it's just a fear of – it's X-Men. It's a fear of anything that's different, man. You know, they don't
– There was also that reference in the article about Plato saying that writing is the bane of oral communication.
Ah.
It was like writing is like for dummies who can't understand oral communication or something like that. And how it'll lead to the death of it or something, because people can't really understand as well, you know, right. as the oral communication or something like that.
Right. The article he's speaking, this is from the Defending Video Games article, correct?
Yeah.
Just so anyone who's out there, listen, all four of you, it was in the Friday edition of the Wall Street Journal, I believe, either Friday or Thursday. Do you remember when it was?
No. Friday or Thursday. We'll leave it at that.
Okay.
I believe I was reading it yesterday, so it's probably Friday.
Okay. I have it in my sent mail box, actually. This was June 2nd, so yes, it was Friday. It is on opinionjournal.com/taste/ID=11000-8463. Or just go to opinionjournal.com and just look it up. And the reason why, you know, I'm so adamant about you guys reading this is because it's finally good to hear someone defending, you know, games and using legitimate defense instead of just saying, like, oh, blah, 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 I'm a newspaper journalist, I've got to say that video games are bad. It's written by Brian, with an I, Brian C. Anderson. So just look up that article. But anyways, there's more to this story about the whole underage gaming thing. Doug Lowenstein, who is, you know, great guy, he's been constantly waging this war against, like, oh, video games are bad and they'll give you bad breath. He's president of the Entertainment Software Association, the ESA, I believe used to be called the ISDA, right? Interactive Software, something, something, something. Yeah. And this is what he said. We are deeply disappointed by the actions of the Minnesota legislature and Governor Pawlenty. We believe that SF-785, which is the bill number, is unnecessary and will restrict the First Amendment rights of Minnesota citizens. To enact feel-good bills knowing that they're likely to be tossed by the courts is the very height of cynicism. The computer and video game industry intends to file suit in Minnesota Federal District Court shortly, asking that the state's new video game law be overturned. So he's actually going to file a suit against this thing.
Yeah, I hope they have good defense, or whatever you want to call it.
I don't know. The bill is signed, but it doesn't mean that it's actually... Well, I think it means that it's not actually approved by the courts yet, which is why he said they're likely to be tossed. So, right. It's not necessarily... like, if I was 17 and I went into Minnesota and I bought Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, the AO version, I wouldn't get fined yet, I don't think, because the courts haven't approved it yet. Someone correct me if I'm wrong, any legal people out there, but I don't think
it's...
We
might have to go back to a good friend, what is it? What's that educational show with the Bill? You know, I'm just a Bill.
The one that they spoofed in Family Guy and The Simpsons? I don't know, exactly. But yeah.
Yeah, that cartoon show.
Someone YouTube it. Anyway, to the last story that we're going to discuss before we get into some discussion topics. Sony isn't the only crazy one. Peter Moore basically thinks that backwards compatibility is bleh. I'm trying to find the... Okay, here we go. Kotaku, you guys are great. Here's the story. Moore. Gamers don't care about backwards compatibility. Now, before I go on, I will tell you, us two, we're meeting with Mozart, who wrote the great feature on Atari's E.T., and how that's not the worst game in history, and why it was blamed. But he's actually in New York tomorrow, and we're going to meet up with him. And, you know, according to him, this is the very reason why he has not yet bought an Xbox 360. He is not going to buy it until the games are all backwards compatible. So people do care about this. But anyway, here's what he said. Nobody is concerned anymore about backwards compatibility. We underpromised and over-delivered on that. It's a very complicated thing, very complex work. I'm just stunned that we have hundreds of games that are backwards compatible, like Barbie Horse Adventure. More are coming, but at some point you just go, there's enough, let's move on. Or people aren't as worried about a game being backwards compatible. What are your thoughts on this while I gather mine?
If Xboxes are $50, F backwards compatibility. But as far as Xboxes being $150 still, okay, I'm going to buy an Xbox for $150 and a whole bunch of games. Mm-hmm. Or I'm going to buy Xbox 360 for, what, $400?
Mm-hmm. Or $300, depending on if you want the hard drive and whatever.
Well,
and
the premium.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Xbox 360 for $400 and Xbox for $150 and all those games. Mm-hmm. I mean, basically what Peter Moore is saying, he's probably assuming that most of the market that has an Xbox 360 probably already owns an Xbox. Mm-hmm. But now here's the problem. Most people who already own Xboxes, like families, because this was always a concern I know of people who were purchasing consoles for me when I was a kid, they usually say, is this new thing going to play the old games?
Right, yeah.
And, you know, back when I was a kid, and it was upgrading from Nintendo to Super Nintendo, upgrading from
that was the question.
Master System to Genesis, and from Genesis to Sega CD and the Dreamcast and whatnot. It was like, no, they don't play the older games, but I still have the older system to play it on.
Yeah, I guess. I think from a market perspective, and just speaking from a parent's point of view, what like probably your parents and my parents asked that for is that, you know, it's the impression of, oh, I got a new toy, I'm going to play with this now. It's just like, you know, you get the freaking Transformer, and then like a new super version of that same Optimus Prime comes out the next year, and you throw that one away. You don't throw it away, but it just sits there collecting dust, and the parents like, I just wasted my money.
Mm-hmm.
And the impression is that you buy this new console and you're just lavishing all your attention on it. Now, if you're going to lavish all your attention on the new console, but you still can use the old games and just plug them in without any extra effort, then it's much more convenient than saying, oh, you know, I really want to play Mega Man 3. Let me pull out the NES, let me plug it in and fire it up. Oh, I don't really want to do that anymore. Let me just let it sit there in the closet. You know, so it's that impression of, well, they're not going to use their old toys anymore that I spent so much money on. And personally for me, I just would like to have backwards compatibility so I can get rid of the consoles that I don't necessarily want to keep. Like, I usually keep my stuff just from a collector's standpoint, but if someday I decide to get rid of my PlayStation, like the PS1, because I don't like it sitting around there, like I just don't want it there, mm-hmm. I can still play my PS2 games on my PS1 games on my PS2. Now the Xbox is huge, and I would like to save space. I would like to get rid of it. And I won't be able to play Panzer Dragoon Orta on the 360. And you know what's up with that? But Orta is one of the best games I own for that system. I'm not going to be able to play it.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's just this offhanded comment of, you know, more are coming, but at some point you just go, there's enough, let's move on. You know, you know, you come out of E3 and you give this kind of thinly veiled statement, oh, the top-selling Xbox games will be coming to backwards compatibility list. And that first gives a bad taste. It's like, again, Orta. Orta wasn't that much of a financial retail success, but a lot of fans would want it. But it's not going to come because it's not a top-selling game.
Mm-hmm.
So they promised very little in the outset, and then now they're saying, let's just move on. You know, it kind of reeks of, I hate to do this again, but it's just funny, Sony saying that there will be 3 HDMI outputs and 3 displays or whatnot, or 2 zillion Ethernet ports on the back of their PS3.
Oh boy.
But yeah, it just doesn't sit right with me. And if it comes to the point where Nintendo comes up and says, here's our virtual console, you can download Mario 1, 2, and 3 in Kid Icarus, and then here's Sega stuff, and you can download Sonic, and here's TurboGrafx, here's Keith Courage, alright, have a nice day. It's like, what happened to this big catalog of stuff that, you know, we're anticipating? You know what I mean? But I guess that's asking for too much. Or, no, we're not asking for too much.
We're not asking for too much.
We're paying for hundreds of dollars for this technology that should be advancing every day. Give us something, you know?
Yeah, so. I mean, there's just certain things, and unfortunately, I'm just, whenever it comes to Nintendo bringing out a good idea about something, I always follow it, hoping that it will be supported.
E-reader.
Although, I'm getting to it. I really feel like I forget about the past when it comes to supporting new innovative things,
mm-hmm.
like the e-reader, which was supposed to have Game & Watch converted to it, and that just became vaporware. That was supposed to have Nintendo titles being converted to it. That became Liveware. And, you know, the only other application for that device was Mario 3, which was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And Animal Crossing, which was really cool, but it was very limited. It's like, you know, you guys could have done something for, like, a lot of different titles with that. And then there goes the, you know, Game Boy to GameCube adapter, supported by very few games, and only supported by a even smaller amount of games very well. And then there's, trying to think.
Rob.
Rob, that only supported two games.
Gyro Knight!
Stack up! And there's our good friend, the Power Pad. That only supported three games, I think.
Good point.
You know, these are things that could have had their own libraries and would have been very good as dedicated series of titles.
Super
Scope. But they just weren't supported. Wireless adapter for Game Boy Advance. This is another one.
Yeah. 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 That supports like one game?
Two. Maybe three. Pokemon, Fire Red, Leaf Green, Mario Golf. Maybe Mario Tennis.
Oh, Mario Golf, that's right. Yeah, I guess we shouldn't bring up the Virtual Boy. But anyways.
Well, Virtual Boy is a separate console that just didn't work. Sorry, Mr. Well, should I say, Yokoi-san.
Rest in peace.
And I really hope that you didn't die because of that.
No, it was actually a freeway accident. It was a car accident.
Yeah, I know, but that happened shortly after the Virtual Boy.
Yeah. Let's stop being grim. You have something to rant about.
Yeah. You guys and this, I don't feel like I can do three things at once thing. I'm talking about you reviewers of a particular game that combines pinball and war strategy.
Rally.
Called Odama. Rally.
Push forward.
You don't know until
push forward.
You don't know until you try.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I just like to put in a couple of words about this. I think that when people say things like some people can't chew gum and walk at the same time, Nintendojo, and people who say that it's annoying to try and play pinball while trying to organize troops on a field, you guys need to like open your minds and just try and multitask. I mean, I guess maybe because I work and live a life of multitasking, that something like Odama is just easy to me. Although I must say that I have had my trial and error points. It has nothing to do with that.
I know. I'm kidding.
But I've had my time where I would spend like an hour on a level, but it would be really hard because there would be something I'd have to do, and it was like I can almost do it, it's almost done, and then I fail. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I might run out of time, or I might run out of troops, or I might just screw up and hit everybody on my side with the stupid Odama.
Uh-huh.
But it wasn't anything that I could say was negative about the game. It was just that I screwed up.
Right.
You know, I don't think that there is a design error in this game, particularly. I just think that taste and multitasking makes people say that there are design errors in the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is kind of interesting because I'm going to bring up Mozart again. He was talking to me online about this game called Siren for the PS2. Now, it's kind of survival horror-ish or something like that, but...
Yeah, it's supposed to be, like, really scary.
Yeah, you're basically trying to get from point A to point B, but there are these zombies called the Shibito who are coming after you, and it's really supposed to be really difficult. You have this power called the Sight, where you can see through their eyes. So you can kind of see what their movement patterns are, so you kind of memorize them, and then you sneak by them.
That's freaking scary.
Right. So, like, you get to... It's a test of how well can you strategize against what you see, what you know that they're doing, and see through their eyes and see what routes they take, and how well can you get through that? How well can you remember it? And a lot of reviewers are saying this is just trial and error. I don't get what the hell the point of this game is. It's not really coherent, and, you know, he was railing against that. He was like, people just don't like a good challenge nowadays.
No, they don't. I mean, with the amount of walkthroughs and the amount of strategy guides and the amount of help that people need, I mean, I'll even go as far as talk about Warcraft.
Uh-huh.
People in Warcraft, when you get to endgame and you start talking about doing raids where the game is supposed to be difficult, like really difficult, yeah. where basic enemies can kill an entire group of 40 people. These things are supposed to be learning experiences where
right.
you take a group of 40 people and you try and build yourselves into hardened vets at this place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you find out what you're supposed to do with this guy. You get to a boss and he whoops your ass. And you're like, oh my god, what the fuck did he just do to us? And then you come back again. And you're like, okay, well, when he does that, we're going to do this. And we're going to try such and such and such and such. That's all learning experience, right?
Yeah.
And don't you think that would kind of like add to the fun of the game? Because you're kind of presenting yourself with a challenge. And you're trying to figure out how to solve these puzzles. And trying to figure out how to beat this boss that does this at a certain time. And does that at a certain time. He might be attacking your main tank. Who's supposed to take all the damage. And then like 5 seconds later, he just goes berserk. And you're trying to figure out why he goes berserk. And then you finally figure out why he goes berserk. And then you kill him. And you get all happy because you finally succeeded in something that was thought to be impossible. You know, that kind of thing.
It's funny how people look at these things differently. Because, I mean, everyone who loves Guitar Hero, I question why they don't like other harder games. You know, Guitar Hero is ass hard on expert. You know, you get these songs and when you finally figure it out, it's like an epiphany.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, and then, you know, someone goes and plays Ikaruga, all right, can't figure out how to beat the goddamn boss. Oh, it's too hard. It's too hard. I can't play this. Or what else is there? I challenge any 12-year-old in this day and age to go and play Gunstar Heroes on a Genesis and not throw that controller down in disgust when they come up to Seven Force because the game is in 2D, it's not pretty enough, and it's hard.
Yeah. But,
when I was your age...
That really does suck, but in addition to that, I just wanted to kind of finish my point.
Mm-hmm.
In Warcraft nowadays, because of the fact that there are people who have kind of walked that road of learning things,
yeah,
they now have posted strategies to beat, you know, the bosses that were thought to be impossible. Nowadays, when you get into a guild that does these end game things, they're not doing the learning process. They're reading strategies so that they can overcome the boss, and without learning how to actually beat it themselves.
Yeah.
And that kind of annoys me, because then when you get into something that's really difficult and you can't beat, then you think, oh, this is impossible. We're not supposed to be able to do this. You know, why can't Blizzard make it easier? Or why can't such and such make it easier? You know, and there's the people who play console games, like, where's the walkthrough? Yeah. Or the people who jump at the chance to get a walkthrough or strategy guide when they buy a game. And then that leads to the other thing of, when you buy a game, like, I bought New Super Mario Brothers, right?
Yep.
Would you like to buy the strategy guide? 10% off.
Oh,
no,
God.
I don't need no goddamn strategy guide. I figured it out myself.
Yeah, I hate that. I hate that.
So that kind of annoys me, the whole strategy guide thing.
It's like,
sorry, I hit a nerve there.
Oh, no, I agree. It's like 10% off. I'm like, motherfucker, you're going to make me spend $10 more. Screw the 10% off. I mean, I'm still going to pay more for something.
There's only one exception to the rule.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Square Enix and their BS titles. I don't mean BS in an offending way. I mean that games like Final Fantasy VIII and games like Final Fantasy X and games like Final Fantasy IX and games like most of their new games that are out, because some of those things that you need or some of those things that you want, like some of the strongest items in the game, you can't find without a strategy guide.
Yes.
How are you supposed to know that in Final Fantasy IX, if you beat the game in under 12 hours, you get Excalibur 2, which is like the strongest sword in the game?
Oh, I'm going to go play that now.
And the only way that you could beat the game in under 12 hours is if you like open the disc tray and skip the cinematics and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Or if you get a cheat, of course, to reset the time to zero when you get to that point in the game at the end.
Oh, of course.
Where they can give you the Excalibur 2.
Cheats suck.
Mm-hmm. But having near impossible things like that they don't even tell you about,
right,
also sucks.
There are some, just to touch on a point that you brought up earlier in terms of design flaws, there are some games that are hard because of design flaws. And I'll point out, as great as this game is on the NES, the original Ninja Gaiden, it's a great game. Then there's one design flaw in how the enemies respond. You know what I'm talking about, right?
When you're trying to do something and it has something to do with a cliff, and the enemies are jumping off the cliff, and then you try and kill it to jump off, and an enemy responds and kills you in the middle of air.
Yeah.
That, well, not kills you, but hits you, so you fall to your death. Yeah.
It's not so much that the enemy is responding. It's more how it responds. Like, you can... There's, like, this very small threshold where if you stand in the exact right or the wrong place and you defeat an enemy... It comes back right after you defeat, like immediately after it dies, it comes back, and it's like this a couple of pixel range at the edge of the screen. If that's where the enemy lives, and you hit it, it'll come back. And that, I think that's exactly what you're saying about jumping off a cliff. If you jump off,
you kill somebody, and as soon as you jump off a cliff, that enemy actually comes. Yeah. Well, another enemy comes out of that same space.
Yeah, exactly. Or, and I don't know if this is necessarily a design flaw, but Castlevania, how you can't change your direction in midair. Now, I kind of attribute this to physics, though, because, I mean, really, how can you really change, unless you're like a slam dunk champion, how can you change direction in midair, you know, in real life?
Right.
But at the same time, you kind of think, well, it's a video game, and the way that the action is placed in this game... it kind of feels restrictive, and you don't need limited jumping in order to make a game hard. I mean, look at Castlevania 4, for Christ's sake. That game is ass hard, and you could control Simon Belmont's jumps whenever you want to.
But so, you know what? I think that they just weren't thinking about it in the first one.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that excuses what could be a flaw, though. You know, if you don't think about it, that's a bad thing. You know, you got to think about these things. But maybe if they were, maybe they intend... Like, I remember you talking about Resident Evil Online on the PS2, and they intentionally did not include voice chat, and I thought that was a design flaw because that kind of makes communication, like, horrible when an online game is based on that. But you brought up a good point in that it does scare the crap out of you, and Resident Evil is supposed to be scary.
Mm-hmm.
So... I don't know where you draw the line there, but... I mean, in the case of Odama, so you believe that it's designed... pretty soundly.
Yeah, I do believe that it's designed pretty well in terms of how the pinball works,
right?
And how the voice operation works. The voice operation is flawless.
Mm-hmm.
You say something, and you may even like say the wrong thing, but mean the right thing, and they'll do the right thing. And so, you know, if you're saying like press forward is the real term that they accept, but say if you said push forward or move forward, they would still recognize the forward part.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's cool. Know, and then there are times where, like, I'll be saying rally, 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 and I'm like, okay, I need them to charge. And I'll be like, I'm charge, and they'll know I mean charge.
So
they won't go,
So the instruction booklet says one thing, but they've programmed it to accept things that are similar.
Well, no, it's just that I think that's just how the voice recognition works, because if, you know, you can say press forward, and the press part probably isn't the part that's primarily recognized by the voice recognition. It's probably the forward part.
But I mean, like, rally versus charge.
Oh, well, it's because I think it takes the general sense of what you're saying. Like, if I go, charge!
Oh, okay.
You know, that kind of thing. Like, if I was saying, like, rah!
Charge, motherfucker!
They probably wouldn't do anything.
Right.
You know... I think things like that really helps, because it's not like Baloo in Brain Age, where people are screaming into their DSs because they can't say Baloo in one syllable.
Right.
And side note.
Yep.
Voice calculation is awesome.
Damn it! I need to get back into that game. I just. Any more on this topic, or should we call it a wrap for tonight? Since we're both ass tired.
I think I'm done ranting about people talking about games that are too hard for them, because I'm about to start up again.
Right. okay, I know last week I said kind of an offhanded comment, like we'd talk about product launches, but I don't know what I was talking about. We could say that for another podcast or whatever, but next week, thanks to Pat Hickey on the GameSpot forums for this, he suggested that we talk about genres that really haven't been getting too much love lately. I would like to nominate shooters, because no one likes 2D shooters anymore. I'm going to go on a little rant about that next week. We didn't do it this week, but we will do it next week. Maybe squeeze the product launches in there somehow. But I think that's a wrap. You good to
shooters
go?
Shooters for life?
Shooters for life. All right, that's it, everybody. If you have any comments or questions or want us to talk about something, hit us up at mailbag@trygames.net, which remains empty. We're looking for all three of you to send in letters. But until next week, that's a wrap. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye, everybody.